The Senate's reauthorization bill does more than just fund the FAA. The aircraft sales tax may soon be back in Massachusetts, and American Airlines joins competitors in charging for that second check bag. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Wednesday, April 30th, 2008. We're getting details now on the final form of the Senate's FAA reauthorization bill, which is expected to come to a full Senate vote by the week's end. Like many federal bills, several additions have been tacked on as it made its way through the sausage factory. Dow Jones reports one provision would mandate a two-year wait before a departing FAA inspector could represent an airline he oversaw in dealings with the FAA. The Aviation Trust Fund would be fed by higher taxes on fuel used by general aviation aircraft, and the FAA would get the formal go-ahead for next-gen air traffic control. In further addressing an airline-to-inspector relationship recently criticized as too cozy, the bill would require more than one inspector to sign off on any deal in which an airline voluntarily disclosed a maintenance discrepancy in exchange for leniency. A new tracking system would watch for maintenance deadlines not met by the airlines. While it doesn't contain what you'd call a full-on passenger's bill of rights, Senate Bill 1300 does make important progress on the issue. The bill would require airlines to provide the DOT with contingency plans for providing food, water, and clean restrooms to passengers during lengthy tarmac delays. Now, you've heard that before, but what's new here is an amendment by Senator Barbara Boxer of California, which would empower the DOT to accept, reject, or request revisions to those plans. Until now, the Transportation Department has ducked any enforcement responsibility, and the airlines have put forth only voluntary measures they later ignored. It's not clear whether the new arrangement would give DOT any real teeth, or whether DOT would actually embrace its new role. If Senate Bill 1300 does pass, it will face a fairly straightforward reconciliation with its counterpart in the House of Representatives. Its chances of a signature from President Bush are less sure. It was the Bush administration which originally proposed funding the Aviation Trust Fund in part with user fees on general aviation, and this bill doesn't have them. The Massachusetts House of Representatives Monday voted to eliminate the state's five-year-old sales tax exemption on aircraft sales, parts, and maintenance. Many representatives apparently believe, like Governor Deval Patrick, that the 40% increase in aircraft based in Massachusetts over the last 5 years is just a coincidence. AOPA reports the state's revenues from aviation also increased substantially since the exemption was put in place, but lawmakers trying to fill a state budget gap want to put the tax back in place, which in theory will provide only $8 million against an estimated state budget gap of $1.3 billion. As the Framingham Metro West Daily News notes, that works out to only 0.03% of the state's $28 billion budget. The paper reports more than a dozen lawmakers took the podium in 2 hours of debate, but the final vote was 86-67 in favor of ending the aviation exemption. Massachusetts State Senate President Teresa Murray has publicly opposed eliminating the waiver, but it's not clear whether she'll be able to muster the votes needed to keep that exemption in effect. Airlines reeling from fuel price increases have so far met with little success in passing along those costs in ticket prices, so they're getting creative. On Monday, American Airlines joined U.S. Airways, United, Delta, Northwest, and Continental in calling for a new fee for passengers checking more than one piece of luggage, and that starts on May 12th. The policy also applies to travelers on American Eagle regional flights. Advantage Gold, Platinum, or Executive Platinum members, full fare ticket holders, and those traveling on international flights going anywhere but Canada, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands will still get that second bag free. Communities throughout Hawaii are scrambling to find alternatives after Aloha Airlines was forced to shut down its inter-island cargo service on Monday. Aloha carried 85% of Hawaiian inter-island cargo, including mail, and the operation was profitable, but the company's lead lender, GMAC Commercial Finance, declined to provide additional funding to keep Aloha going. The Associated Press reports that Aloha drew two bidders for its cargo operation, but when GMAC said neither bid was high enough, both bidders withdrew. Aloha's assets will now be liquidated, and last week's vote by pilots to authorize a strike is looking pretty moot. Up next on ANN, Michael Chertoff has good news for airline travelers with suspicious names. Tempelhof Airport supporters vow to fight on after losing Sunday's referendum. And Shelton earns European certification for its upgraded EFIS software. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. For 3 years running, the Cirrus SR-22 G2 has been the world's best-selling single-engine four-seat airplane. Today, the SR-22 G2 defines the new Cirrus standard model. Why? We'd love to invite you to see for yourself by taking a ride in the new breed of airplane that has taken the aviation industry by storm. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or on the web at cirrusdesign.com. Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. For instance, the noise-canceling microphone used in the Clarity Aloft headset is a high-fidelity, noise-canceling electret condenser microphone with performance optimized for speech frequencies in extremely high-noise environments. Stage performers and musicians use this same microphone because they must insist on the highest level of sound reproduction. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for April 30th, 2008. On the web, you'll find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Monday, the Department of Homeland Security announced improvements aimed at strengthening aviation security while decreasing the hassle factor for travelers at airport checkpoints. If your name is similar to one on the terror watch list, you've been unable to check in for your flight ahead of time online. DHS will now allow airlines to establish procedures to verify your identity so you can finally escape Southwest's beeline at boarding. The process is said to involve, quote, limited biographical data, unquote, provided voluntarily by the passenger to the airline and not collected by the government. Think mother's maiden name or your first elementary school, favorite pet, things like that. Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff says the new program will benefit not only travelers but the TSA. Quote, as we make the checkpoint environment calmer, it becomes easier to spot individuals with hostile intent, unquote. Chertoff says passenger stress is a major cause of false positives in the screening process, which he said one airline reported at 9,000 cases per day. They were defeated in court, now they've been defeated at the polls, but supporters of Berlin's historic Tempelhof Airport say their fight to save the airport is not over. The Associated Press reports over 530,000 people cast ballots in Sunday's referendum, and a comfortable majority wanted to keep Tempelhof open. But a 25% turnout is required for the vote to count in Berlin, and only 21.7% came to the polls. On Monday, Berlin Mayor Klaus Wowereit, who opposes efforts to keep Tempelhof open, called on Tempelhof supporters to respect the majority of residents who either didn't support the airport or voted in their own way by staying home. The Society for the Protection of City Airport Tempelhof reiterated calls for federal and local lawmakers to meet with airline representatives and Berlin residents to end what the group called a political standoff. Shelton Flight Systems, which is now part of Cobham's Avionics and Surveillance Division, is pleased to announce that EASA, the European Aviation Safety Agency, has approved software version 6.0b for use on the company's electronic flight information system. That move clears the way for deployment on hundreds of fixed and rotary wing aircraft within countries under EASA's jurisdiction. The company says the software offers more than 40 significant benefits for end users, including ADS-B data link display functions with weather, traffic, and flight information, one-touch activation of an ILS approach, expanded hover vector for helicopters displayed with a large radar altitude scale on the multifunction display, and an FMS-style navigation log for easy preview of procedures. The company says its Integral Master Caution voice warning system provides a wide range of alarm and on-screen alerts if any undesirable conditions arise along the flight path. There's nobody gladder than we are to hear this news. The Experimental Aircraft Association says it will provide EAA members camping at Oshkosh's North 40 or Camp Scholar with free Wi-Fi internet this year. It's an expansion of last year's free experiment. EAA wants to make it clear that signal strength may vary because of computer type and setup, weather conditions, and other factors. If your own computer is not cooperating, Connected computers will be provided at internet cafes located in EAA Member Village and in Camp Scholler. A limited number of Ethernet connections are also available for members at those locations. Still ahead, Embraer moves ahead of schedule with the Phenom 300. The Royal Air Force loves its King Airs. And there were no injuries, but some very old metal got bent. You're listening to Aero News.
Remember what the future used to look like? The flying cars, the spaceports, the rocket packs and spandex outfits. That was some future, wasn't it? But hey, here's the real future. A Garmin Wass Navigator. It makes its own glide path out of GPS signals, so you can land IFR at thousands of airports with no ILS or other ground-based approach aids. Now that's a future you can believe in. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800 for Cessna.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Monday, April 28, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. New airliners in development often take longer to develop than projected. It's nice to be able to report an exception. Embraer says its Phenom 300, which was projected to make its first flight about mid-year, flew for an hour and 22 minutes on Tuesday, drawing enthusiastic reviews from its crew. The flight was made from the company's Gavião Peixoto test runway in Brazil by Captain John Savalho Corcao and Embraer Chief Pilot Eduardo Alves Menini, accompanied by flight test engineer Jens Peter Theodor Geiger-Wentz. Corcao noted afterward, quote, "The quality of the Phenom 300 design and onboard high technology provided a very smooth and pleasant flight, increasing the thrill of flying the aircraft for the first time," unquote. The aircraft was put through a series of maneuvers as engineering teams received and analyzed real-time telemetry on the ground. Embraer says three development planes will accumulate 1,400 hours on the way to certification, and a fourth will be dedicated to longer-term testing. The nine-seat executive jet is scheduled to enter service in mid-2009, selling for $6.65 million. Hawker Beechcraft Corporation has delivered the first of two Beechcraft King Air B-200 GT aircraft to Serco Defense Science and Technology for service in the United Kingdom's Royal Air Force as a multi-engine pilot trainer. The second B-200 GT will be delivered this summer, and both aircraft will join No. 45 Squadron at RAF Cranwell. RAF will then have a total of nine King Airs in service. Air Commodore Brian Newby, Director of Flying Training at 22 Group, commented, quote, "The King Air B-200 fleet at Cranwell has been incredibly successful, both in the speed in which the aircraft entered service to replace the obsolete Jetstream and the way in which it is providing cost-effective multi-engine pilot training for the military today. We look forward to supplementing our existing fleet with these additional two new aircraft," unquote. RAF's first King Air entered service in 2003. The new aircraft will help answer the demand for military multi-engine pilots and a growing need for modern glass cockpit training. Nobody was injured when two vintage World War II aircraft collided on the ground during the Spirit of Flight air show in Galveston, Texas over the weekend, but the accident did result in significant damage to the planes. Larry Gregory, who's president of the Lone Star Flight Museum at Shoals Field, told the Houston Chronicle a Supermarine Spitfire apparently taxied into the tail section of the museum's recently restored Hawker Hurricane at about 2:30 p.m. Central Time on Saturday. The impact flattened the Hawker's empennage and sent the Spitfire off the side of the taxiway, where it came to rest on its nose. Gregory said the Spitfire sustained damage to its wings and landing gear. Fortunately, both planes can be repaired. And finally, another World War II aviator who embodied the spirit of the greatest generation has left us. The Los Angeles Times reports Dick Rossi, who downed six Japanese planes while serving with the Flying Tigers, died at his home in Fallbrook, California, April 17th, of complications from pneumonia. Rossi was 92 years old. Rossi came from a family of 10 kids, grew up in Placerville, California, and studied electrical engineering for 2 years at the University of California at Berkeley. But he couldn't shake his dreams of flying and adventure, so he joined the Navy in 1939. He qualified for flight training, but wound up as a flight instructor in Pensacola, not exactly satisfying his craving for adventure. Before the U.S. officially entered World War II, Rossi learned of a secret volunteer group being formed to battle Japanese air attacks against China. Rossi resigned his Navy commission to earn $600 a month, with a bonus of $500 for each Japanese plane shot down. Rossi's squadron first engaged the enemy over at Kunming, China, in December of 1941. The Japanese attack took a terrible civilian toll, but the U.S. volunteers downed 3 enemy planes, and the Japanese never again attacked the area. During 7 months of combat, the group, which was dubbed the Flying Tigers by the locals, went on to tally 296 Japanese aircraft shot down. After the war ended, Rossi partnered with fellow Tiger Robert Prescott to found an air freight operation called the Flying Tiger Line. In 1966, he married Lydia Cowgill, a flight attendant serving aboard one of the line's military transport flights. Later, Prescott and Rossi helped launch the Hungry Tiger, a Southern California restaurant chain which had 42 locations at its peak. The Flying Tigers might have become a dusty footnote in history were it not for Dick and Lydia's work to organize reunions and promote the story of the group. Dick served for 65 years as president of the Flying Tigers Association. In 1991, the Tigers, who had flown their missions as volunteers, were finally officially recognized as war heroes after the U.S. government's role in organizing the group was declassified. The pilots were officially recognized as veterans, and Rossi was awarded 2 Distinguished Flying Crosses and 2 Presidential Citations. Lydia says there are now only 4 of the original pilots left alive. Let this serve as a reminder. There aren't too many opportunities left for all of us to say thank you. And that's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, more with Mike Hange of Pilatus Business Aircraft. You'll hear Mike's answers to a few questions I asked him after the Aero TV cameras stopped rolling. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our Aerocasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.